Simply Authentic is the podcast where realtors and referral partners get the conversations they actually want to hear. I'm Christy Norris with Great American Title, a family-owned and operated title company with over 30 years serving both Missouri and Kansas with 13 locations. We focus on providing exceptional customer service and trustworthy, reliable title insurance coverage, making dreams come true when closing at a time. That's why Great American Title is proud to sponsor the Simply Authentic podcast, bringing the most relevant, real, and sometimes challenging conversations that help us all get better. Tune in, subscribe, and let's keep this industry moving forward together.
Welcome to the Simply Authentic Podcast with Angie and Tanya. We are real estate pros, entrepreneurs, leadership gurus, and community enthusiasts. Our passion is sharing our experiences to enrich the lives of others. We hope to inspire you to live authentically.
Welcome back to the Simply Authentic Podcast. I'm Tanya Murfin.
And I'm Angie Mullings, and we're very excited. First episode recording of the year, and we have city manager for the city of Springfield, David Cameron, as a guest.
Hello, David.
Thanks for having
me. Yeah,
thanks
welcome.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
It's going to be a good one.
It's going to be a great one. Yes. Yeah. We have so many great things going on in the city, and that's what we hope to kind of share with our listeners today. But let's start by telling them a little bit about you.
Well, so I'm a Southwest Missouri kid. I'm from 417 land. I grew up in a small town about 35 miles east of here called Miller. Mm-hmm. Graduated from there. I was born at Cox South, so I always say I'm a Cox alumni from the hospital system here. Uh-huh. But yeah, Springfield was the place growing up as a kid that you came in to go to the mall. My grandmother worked and retired at JCPenney.
Oh, wow.
So getting to come to Springfield was like the big treat. So yeah. Running around, going to Aladdin's Castle, you know, hanging out in the mall. And so it's... You know, this is home. It's a little bit just why I even chose to come back to Southwest Missouri. I was in Northwest Arkansas for 16 years working down there whenever we really began to take off and learned a lot about public-private partnerships and partnering and kind of left the career field I was in, but I was in government. But I began to just get very frustrated with like, hey, this could be done easier and more like business and move a little bit quicker. And so I went back to school and got an organizational management degree to coincide with my environmental and my construction or infrastructure background. And so it really just tied the two together that I could understand the worker in the field because I was one. And then also at the same, the political climate. So I like to say that I can negotiate in a sewer ditch when you're building pipe all the way to the Capitol in Washington, D.C. So I feel like that I've had a very diverse mix over the time, and being in Northwest Arkansas exposed me to much different investors, way of thinking, mm-hmm. how to partner, thinking outside the box. And so bringing that back home to where I grew up, you know, and I've got three adult children that live in the area. One is in Belton. I still say it's in the area, but I got two and here in town. They both work for Mercy, mm-hmm. both nurses for Mercy. And then okay. I got two granddaughters now, Addie J and Brinley. And so there is a much different dynamic of why I go to work every day now. Yeah. That it's not just, I mean, at this for stage sure. of life, you're like, you know what? Everything I do today impacts those girls. And mm-hmm. I want to make sure that mm-hmm. it's something that are like, my grandpa was a part of that. And I did it right.
Yeah. I love that idea.
I do too.
Yeah. So you spent several years in Republic, Missouri.
Yes.
And had a big impact over there. Yeah. And then you came to Springfield just last year.
Yes.
So tell us, what does a city manager do? Tell us about your experience in being one, and so that our listeners can kind of understand what your primary job is.
Well, it's a great question, and I appreciate the opportunity to clarify it, because a lot of times, like, what does a city manager actually do? Are you
right.
Like, I get asked this a lot, are you like the mayor? No, it's like if you look at a company, Fortune 500 company of any company, you have a board of directors, you have a chairman, then you have a CEO. Mm-hmm. So I would view my position with the city of Springfield or any administrator position as I'm the CEO that runs the day-to-day function of the city. So I have 22 different departments. I have two deputy managers that spread out those operations, but they run the day-to-day function on my behalf. While I do more of the outward facing for the community and the connection pieces, working with the investors, working with neighborhoods or working just with businesses as well, but also working on leadership and vision for where we're going as an organization, creating culture and how we do business. The mayor and council, their role is the legislative body. So it's just like it would be in anything. They set the policy that I'm to enforce, but I get to participate with them in creating what that policy looks like, because it's what I use to govern the day-to-day function of the city. But yeah, police, fire, every department you can think of in the city reports technically directly to the city manager's office, but I have designees that I'm allowed to designate that to. And the other thing that's probably what most people don't are aware of in government, not every city has one, it's called a charter. So it's a constitution of the city. So the voters have established how they want their city to run, and they voted to vote that there is a CEO that runs their city, not an elected body. So they're charged with running the legislative piece, but it clearly outlines in the charter that the manager runs the day-to-day function.
Okay. That was one of the questions we were going to ask, the difference between your job and the city council job.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So they do not, like, for example, city council, they work on what policies they see that need to be established, be it public safety. Like, the city has established five priorities. So they establish priorities, what they think is necessary for their citizens: public safety, economic vitality, obviously transportation. One of my favorites that I'm working on is called operational excellence, of how we move at the speed of business, or some would say move at the speed of success. They kind of oversee that it's okay to do that. And then what I do is go execute those pieces. But anytime you have a, like I always say this, you don't see at Ford Motor Company a board of director calling down to the floor saying you need to put more rivets in the truck.
Right.
So you got to make sure that there's clear alignment in government that let your professionals run the day-to-day piece, but if they're the guardrails to us on behalf of the people.
Makes sense. Is it different, correct me if I'm wrong, Republic, total volunteer in terms of your city council and mayor?
Yes.
Same with City of Springfield?
It is a little bit different in Springfield. The city council and mayor in Republic actually did get compensated.
Okay.
So they got, I wouldn't call it fair compensation.
Right, right.
And so, I think when during my tenure, they would say we should have been paid more because they were being asked to do a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a little bit different. I think that there ought to be some level of financial consideration considering the amount of time you're asking people to put in. This is the third largest city in the state of Missouri. Republic was not, and they pay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I understand there's debates on both sides, but I just know what, in my job, in my capacity, I push those elected bodies a little bit further. It's like, we got a lot more work to do. And so I do think there's consideration at some point that'll be a charter consideration that needs to be discussed.
Yeah.
I would agree.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's challenging to work with people who are volunteer in nature, essentially, and they don't have the day-to-day knowledge that you know all the time. I mean, some are more engaged than others, right? But
absolutely. I think we have to be very cognizant, and I am in my office, like, they have a day job.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine doing my job plus and then going to a meeting at night plus being exposed to criticism or content, because you're always on. I mean, I don't care if I go to a restaurant. I don't care if it's breakfast in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
There's very relatively, when you're in those capacities, there's not a lot of room for personal space in that, because of that role.
Yeah, it's a public role.
It is. Yeah. And so that's part, that's what you, I mean, I don't complain about it at all, because I signed up. Like, I know what I've got myself into. And so I create those personal spaces for myself mentally that I can have freedom around outside of my job.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, for those that do it for free, I don't take that for granted, because it can be pretty contentious at times if you haven't noticed.
Yes. I've seen a few things going on.
Just a few.
I've watched a city council meeting or two.
Right.
Yeah. So about 6 months ago, roughly, we saw you at a 417 event, and I said, we need to get you on the podcast. And you said, give me 6 months.
That's right.
And so here we are. It's 6 months. It feels like yesterday to me.
It does.
I don't know what it feels like to you.
It's gone extremely fast. I've learned a ton. But yeah, I thought 6 months is, like, that's a great window. Mm-hmm. It has come extremely fast. Mm-hmm. I can't believe it. Yesterday made since 6 months on the job.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yesterday was
this six. This is very timely, then.
It is. Yes, it is. You almost got it to the day.
To the day.
I'm good. What can I say?
So what has that been like? And what did you set out to do in the first 6 months? And now 6 months later, can you look back on that and tell us, well, you know, I did this or I didn't do this or what? What does that look like?
So I'm going to talk both personally and professionally on this one because I'm really big about that.
Yeah.
I went after it as hard as I could. I set out, I was given, there was a list of, you know, key stakeholders that I wanted to meet. And there was another a list that the council, like, you need, there's a lot of groups in this community. And so very diverse, very broad, but I doubled down on it. So it was kind of like there was about, I think there's 80 groups. I did 325, almost 330 engagements in those first 90 days.
Wow.
Because what I wanted to do was get out. I talk about three words: process, relationship, and trust. Well, the relationship aspect is you've got to get out of the fourth floor of that building to go see people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's the way I lead as a manager is I'm not an office manager. I'm a get out and be face to face, do these type of events and communicate, because that's what people need from their leader of the organization, from their CEO.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have to see that person to understand. That's how you build trust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, but what I also realized real quickly is I couldn't utilize the same tools and skills that I was utilizing even in Republic, like the same cadence I was using to go to work every day and how I was making decisions and how I was delegating and how I was empowering, had to adjust. And I wasn't, but that's what I loved about it. I had maybe a little bit of arrogance, like, this will work anywhere.
Yeah.
Then you're going, this is kind of kicking my can a little bit. I haven't, you know, working 13 or 14 hour days. Yeah, I can do breakfast at 7 o'clock tomorrow. You're doing dinner at night. Like, okay, yeah, I could. And you start doing that cadence, your body starts telling you, enough.
Yeah.
So I started, and I talk a lot about mental health and awareness, but I was actually violating my own rules. So I actually had a great reset. So I would like to, I would say that it was, I hit all the markers that I wanted to hit to meet people, connect, get out, and actually listen, absorb some of those criticisms that were necessary to hear.
Sure.
And at the same time, I also kind of exceeded my expectations internally. So a lot of it was outward facing, but if I'm an employee and a new manager comes on board, I want to know who I'm working for. So the people that have to deploy your mission, vision, and values is not the community. It's your deliverer. So I'm an employee-first leader, so I incorporated them into it. So establishing lunch meetings, instead of utilizing those all outward-facing, I would have meetings with each department, 22. Mm-hmm. And I'm still going through a lot of them, but it was just like, here's what I expect. And setting expectations early. And here's what I need from you. This is all I need. If you want to define success, define it early. And so I'm really, really, after 6 months, I feel very settled into the job. I don't want to say it's like, I feel very much, I use the word cadence or a battle rhythm, some will say, that feels like, okay, I'm on a path that I have control of my calendar, my emotions, my sleep. And I have a life, not just the job, but I have a life out after 5 o'clock too. And that is incredibly important to me, because if all I'm going to do is the job, I don't necessarily want to do that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So true. Yeah. And I think being in our industry in real estate, we can sometimes work 24/7 just like you.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. And in the busy season, very often you're the last person that gets any time. So we have learned that in the many years in this business too, that your family has to be an appointment as well as your appointment to show houses, and mental health and rest and sleep are so important for the next day's clients or your family, right?
100%. Well, the thing that I realized, and I will openly admit it, in those first 90 to 120 days, I saw my granddaughters once.
Oh my.
And they live. And so my kids just have a, you know, Dad, you are dad first.
Yes.
Your grandpa,
and
the city can wait.
Yeah,
you got so learning not to let everybody else and create the space for your personal life is something that was a lot easier in Republic.
Yeah,
here it was like, wait a minute, I have to actually. I think you worded it better than I could even remotely say. I have to. It's almost embarrassing to say it this way. I have to calendar in time, text your son.
I have an appointment tonight.
Yes,
and that's with your family.
Yes.
And they don't need, nobody else needs to know that.
Yeah, you're like, you're having a date with your, I need to call him. It's a reminder. But it's really where you're at. Like, is it really that bad? It's like, if you want to live a balanced life, you're going to have to do things that most other people, most, quite frankly, don't have to do.
Yeah.
Like, I understand why you can't have time for that. Because you I do believe I'm called to lead and take on a large task, and I want to do that well, but I also want to live my life well. So you got to, it's about prioritizing how you go about it.
And balance, because you're not going to do either of them well if you're oversaturated with one.
Amen.
Amen.
Well, you kind of talked about what you prioritized. You talked about getting out in the public and being that public face, and then talking internally to all your different groups. So that's kind of what you prioritized in that first 6 months, it sounds like. So what's been the biggest surprise or the biggest challenge in that first 6 months?
Well, I think the biggest surprise is the disconnect, what I would consider a disconnect between listening to what the community, what citizens are saying. This is what we really want. And making sure those are incorporated into our priorities. Now, the council's adopted that, but when I came into town, you're thinking, okay, like the Convention Event Center, I'll use that as an example. What I was told, because it landed on my second day on the job, I was not even aware that this discussion. So I've been in a neighboring city for, you know, 10 years, grew up in, I never heard about a Convention and Event Center till, boom, here's the Hundon Report. Well, it's been talked about for 27 years. Everybody's just been wanting this. So presumptuously, I went out and did my onboarding. Like, okay, well, this has already got a backing. The state's given money to it. There's support in the community. Mm-hmm. And when it went to the vote, I'm like, okay, something was amiss.
Yes.
So that was surprising to me how much it's – but it, you know what it told me? There's something amiss.
Yeah.
So this – everybody wants it. This is what it is. But what did the voters want to be heard? And to go out and listen to what that was not quite the same as, hey, we all want this. It's like, we want to make sure you're not taking care of these other things ahead of that, or not why you're avoiding taking care of it.
Right.
That's why the whole idea, what we're going to launch the whole, what my belief is the yes and approach. It's yes and traffic, yes and crime, yes and stormwater, yes and economic vitality, plus a convention center in those discussions. We cannot be one-dimensional. That's what I've learned, is that we get so focused on maybe potentially a one big prize that we need to make sure we have a holistic approach to growth and development, be it annexation, be it expansion, be it the smaller things like a sidewalk and animal control. You can't get lost about what, you know, it's like, I think about my mother who's still alive and doing very well. What matters to her in a day? And I still have to keep that focus that we don't lose sight of that. And that's what I learned, that probably was not as much on the forefront in the community as it should be. But also learned that the city has the ability to move at the speed of business. It just needed leadership. It needed someone to make decisions. The office of the city manager was very centralized, that it was required me to be involved. There's a lot of things that would surprise people, that you would think the CEO of a company is actually clicking buttons to do that. But so I've delegated those things back out, like decentralizing that office, where I have time not to be married to an inbox, like this was waiting for your approval. I mean, I'll give you, if you want an example, I'll give you like a permit. We want to do a car show in a parking lot on Campbell this weekend. David, there's all these permits waiting for your signature. And I'm like, okay, so you're, I mean, it's not hidden knowledge. You're paying me $350,000 a year to click buttons.
Right.
But I was like, wait a minute, I'm starting to see that a lot of it is so centralized around this office. So I'm decentralizing it. You'll hear that word a lot. Decentralize the operation of the city and put the power back in the employees' hands and say, that is a decision that you can make on our behalf. But if you don't set the expectations for how they make those decisions, that's how you end up in micromanagement. So here's, it's like telling my kids, here's the keys to the car. Good luck. No, you tell them this is how you drive, or this is what time. So set the boundaries. And that's what I spent a lot of my time in the first 6 months to do, and then empowering that back out to the employee. But it's crazy how much inefficiency was in that stuff.
It's almost like a completely new world. The day you walk into that job, because if Angie and I were, you know, given the exact same company to run, we're going to run it completely different. There might be similarities, but we just are going to do things differently. So from day one, you've got to figure out all the little minute tasks that, as you said, can be delegated out, and that very important that they get their permit on time, but you don't need to be the one getting that email and having to say that, yes, they can do this, that can be handled by other people. So I'm sure that that is one very tiny example of all the things that you've had to get in order.
Yeah, I would say that's probably one of about 30 or 40 just time management things that I'm like, I'm not going to be at this meeting. You can attend for there. You can be my proxy here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not that I don't care. It's
absolutely.
Like, but if I don't have a value added in that moment, and I like to take what I like to take what it costs per minute to have the CEO and executives in a room, and what does that cost the citizen? Is this a value added? And sometimes relationship building and having conversation and a cup of coffee is also
it's
part of
it. Yeah. Yes.
So I don't want to just be bottom line driven, but I'm like, hey, listen, if we're going to convene this group, there has to be intentionality. It has to be succinct. And so like another great example was I created like a cabinet meeting. So there used to be like all these silo meetings to start the week, meet with this deputy or this deputy or this one and the mayor and then the PIO. And then I was like, okay, once a week, every Monday morning at 8 o'clock, and you can set your watch by it now, the mayor, the clerk, the legal, PIO is all assembled, do a legislative briefing. You get all that information out of the week, like what could be in the way that we need to be anticipating ahead of time. That's done in an hour. Hmm. But was taking almost 5 to 6, and it's like, listen, we can do this all, and it's freed up tremendous amounts of time. But what I want, why I share that in any capacity is, if I'm a citizen or a business owner, I'm like, what has taken so long to get stuff done at the city? Yeah. I can tell you where it was at, because it was like, you're so much in meetings, you're not actually doing anything.
Yeah.
You're just talking. And I was like, can we not just get in a room and just knock these things out at one time? And so everybody's like, thank you for doing this. Mm-hmm. Changed my leadership team meetings to every other week versus every week for 2 hours. They go every other week for an hour and a half. Small little things like I can show you over that six where you're inserting yourself to it.
Yeah.
But the first 90 days, I was trying to accommodate everybody. I was like, okay, we got to change some time management skills here.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Can't say yes to everyone. Tanya, should we take a really quick break? We need to hear from our sponsors.
I think so.
Great leadership isn't about a title. It's about influence, impact, and the ability to navigate change with confidence. Many leaders struggle to communicate their vision, inspire their teams, and make strategic decisions that drive results. Without the right tools, performance and progress can stall. That's where I can help. I'm Angie Mullings. With decades of experience, I can deliver a dynamic keynote and conduct hands-on workshops that equip leaders to lead authentically and create lasting impact. Ready to invest in a more engaged and high-performing team? Reach out today to schedule a consultation. And we're back with City Manager David Cameron. And we were just talking about his first 6 months in office. On the job.
Yeah.
I was thinking, I watch a lot of the city council luncheons, and I love that those are televised so that I can watch them whenever and be informed. But one thing I've noticed is over this your tenure here in 6 months, I've seen a lot of the people on your team at those speaking, and Steve Childress, and I'd like to ask about housing here in just a minute, because Steve gave a great presentation a few weeks back in December, I think, about the missing middle and that kind of thing. But I've also seen other members of your team giving those presentations. So letting them shine and talk about what they really know about. Because,
absolutely. I mean, I think that the critical piece, what I'm so proud about when I left Republic, they operated for 6 months without me, without an administrator. Mm-hmm. Because you build a system that can support without the leadership. So anyone that's a one shot, you know, pony, I guess, how mumble that one out. But if everything's about me, there's a problem.
Yeah.
So it's about making people, giving them the parameters and the width to go out into their own role and expand and shine. And I don't have to be there to say, here, let me just take it from here. Mm-hmm. And I think it gives them some sense of agency back of what their job is versus like, hey, we're waiting for you to give us the okay. Because that's a lot of what that office was. Like, is it okay if we do this? Mm-hmm. No, I'm paying you to give recommendations. I'm not a planner. I'm not a police officer. I mean, I don't run police departments, but I'm like, I need you to be on your game. So what do you want to hear from me for? And I'm definitely not an attorney, so.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on the housing front, especially because we're realtors, and Steve was talking about some changes he was recommending. Could you share a little bit about that with our listeners and what you feel like the city could do better in terms of because we hear it all the time, builders are stymied because they can't get projects done and so on. So,
well, I can talk about the process side. Housing side of what we're working on, Missing Middle and all the different projects they've got. What I can say obviously is the obvious. There's a housing shortage, not just in Springfield, but just in the whole region, the area, nationally. Mm-hmm. And so, but my belief is, and it still is the belief, is you have to partner with what you want. So if you need housing, you need to partner with the development community, not make it difficult for them. Mm-hmm. So remove barriers, don't create them, and make sure that whatever we're changing is flexible. So even if the zoning and all these things that we're working on that these transitions, you have to adjust if they're not working quickly. It can't take 10 years to change it. And so what I'm proud of is that I fully believe that we will have a strategy and a plan that allows us to move and adjust if it's not working. So that's the one thing about it is, like, I expect my team to take risks even if they swing and miss. Mm-hmm. And if we miss, we adjust it. Yeah. And so trying to shoot for perfection, like this is going to be a one-size-fits-all. But in the housing market and the housing side, it has to be both two-dimensional. It has to be, we have to be growing externally, outward-facing, and also internally. And so we have to find ways to incentivize the building in town that's a little bit more complex, make it a little bit easier, lighten some of those opportunities. And that may be, those may be incentives that, like, wait a minute, I'm not getting that on new housing on the outskirts, like, because we're trying to reactivate properties on different areas, and that will be incentivized. That is probably going to be incentivized a little bit differently. And I'm looking forward to offering housing incentives or ways that we can do that in the community where we have spots that are just not financially capable of moving forward, instead of being like, hey, good luck trying to make a dollar out of that. Mm-hmm. Why don't we become partner to that? And that's going to be some interesting dynamic. And there's ways you can do that through development agreements. I did a lot of them, again, in a neighboring city, where you just do a development agreement with the developer, even residential builders. And that's going to have to become new. If we're going to figure out a way to address the crisis, we have to get involved in being a part of the solution, not leave it just to the builder or the developer. And that's what I learned in Northwest Arkansas. You got to find ways to partner, not just say, hey, it's on you to bear all these costs.
No kidding. And that is exactly how we get stuck.
It is.
Yeah.
Who pays for it?
Exactly. Old thinking.
Yeah.
What's
missed is, you know, it's what I got a chuckle, because there was times where, like, we had, I think there was like 2,200 doors at one time going on in Republic. And they're like, we're growing too fast. I said, what you need to understand, if you think that retail and commercial come because of just the quaintness of your town, sorry, that's not how it works. It's based upon heads and beds and people and door knob. I mean, and they're looking at income as well. Mm-hmm. But if you're not growing, they're going to move their money and their investment to where they're making money.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're not going to put no one would go out and put a grocery store or convenience store in a corner and there's no one within 3 miles.
Right. Yeah.
That makes sense. Basically, you want more growth and development. So everyone shares in the cost and helps provide income back versus raising taxes to take care of everything.
Right.
So you definitely need to be growing. Not only that, in your workforce. Who's going to replace us all?
That's right.
So true.
David, we wanted to ask you about the Route 66 Festival, which we are celebrating here locally, and I heard the Today Show talking about it last week, nationwide too, but that's going to be a big deal, the 100th anniversary here in Springfield. So what do you know about that, and what is our city going to be doing?
Well, I mean, I think that number one, Cora Scott has done a masterful job on this project. Again, another one of those you come into like, wow, this is a massive opportunity. She's like the chairman of this committee that's leading these efforts, but more on even just at a statewide level. Governor Kehoe has been involved, has offered support, a lot of a lot of financial contributions have been made on sponsorships of that way. But there is a large lineup of folks that are going to be in Great Southern Bank Arena for a concert. It's got some great talent that's going to be coming in, some names, and I don't want to steal Cora's story.
Yeah.
But it's like, It's really exciting, but it's also nerve-wracking for me a little bit because I as someone that's coming from the outside, our corridors, our gateways, we need some work. We're inviting people in, yeah. Mm-hmm. But you're inviting them in. Have you taken care of the gateway to get to the Route 66? And so, yeah. But I think that they have done a tremendous amount of work. The Today Show, yes, under contract, and they've done a great job to help promote this work and this opportunity. But it will be a chance to showcase. I mean, I know they're going to be doing – I mean, I'm probably way out over my skis with this one, but it's still – they're going to be doing live broadcasts from different locations throughout the United States and, yeah. You know, wiring in from these locations, doing kind of like updates from the kickoff, yeah. To different locations along the route. And I just think it's cool that it's – I mean, this is a chance to spotlight on a national level, yeah. Mm-hmm. Springfield, mm-hmm. Missouri, and it's a chance for us to shine. But I think that we are a community that shines already. I just think this is a great opportunity to really just show how we can do it and do it well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do want to make the distinction because everyone around here is used to the Route 66 Festival that is in August.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This is not the same thing. So no. I want to make that distinction.
This is like the, what do they call it, the centennial and happy birthday, you know, 250, they call it the 250. So it's like a lot going on at the same time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it is, yeah, it's this is the kickoff to that centennial of Route 66, and I think that they've chosen Springfield, Missouri, that you know, to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think there is also a, you know, I think you've heard about the on St. Louis Street, the gateway or the signage that's going to be going in. It'll be really cool. Mm-hmm. But I also think there's opportunities for us to build on this a little bit more. It's going to draw even more attention. But I think that it. We have a tremendous opportunity of what we could do. We talked about musical roads and different things like that, mm-hmm. that we could be like drive down that route and you turn your radio to this station and get these type of things.
Okay. Right. Yeah.
Have some fun with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
We're all about the fun.
What a noble thought to have fun in your life.
Yeah, no kidding. So we talk a lot about leadership as well. Obviously, you're a stand out as a leader. You were in Republic. You're starting to gain some momentum here in Springfield. What type of style do you think you have? What type of leadership style? And do you have some mentors that help shape that?
Sure. So I'll start with the mentors, if that's okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So my mentor was my stepdad. I lost him last year. And
I'm so sorry.
Well, he came along whenever I was 12 and I was in that development stage of life where I was ornery and misguided in probably a lot of ways, but he really spoke life into me that I could be whatever I wanted to be. And I just had in my mind as a little, I could never be anything other than just a country kid that I'm not educated. I was not doing well in school, had a very traumatic childhood where it's like, it just going to school was the last of your mind. Just eating dinner at night was probably, more priority to me, mm-hmm. but he came along and really established a mindset. He's like, David, don't ever get beat over a piece of paper. And it takes no talent to quit. Quit shooting at the covey and pick you out a quail. He just created all these different little sayings that was like, I understand what you're saying. Just mm-hmm. pick one topic and do it well, but don't ever get beat over a piece of paper. So get your diploma, go to college, get an associate's degree, get a license, first aid, CPR, and what it taught me was the more I kept adding to my resume that someone else didn't have, it demonstrated my willingness to get there, but it really just instilled in me all the way up to it. He's like, and when I became a city administrator, he's just like, David, I'm not surprised, because he spoke it into existence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the late Don Soderquist, he was the chief operating officer of Walmart. He was a him and the Soderquist Center for Leadership and Ethics down in Northwest Arkansas, his mindset and his legacy is left all over that on the John Brown University campus. Mm-hmm. But he talked about two words, and you'll hear me talk about them a lot, but I added the word trust. He said, David, you can achieve success by two things, processes or relationships, but you sustain them by doing both. I was like, okay, because I was struggling. I was getting results, but I had no relationships.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then you go off on the relationship side, like, hey, you're doing a fantastic. You get 5 stars across your review, and they're not doing 5 stars, but you want to build them up,
mm-hmm.
until you need to go, this isn't working.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So now I've like got your Christmas present. Remember your birthday. That's the relationship side.
Mm-hmm.
So you've worked with people that it's like, I don't care about what happens to you after 5. That's the process side.
Yeah.
He taught me the balance of being a human and a leader at the same time and balancing those two out. And that was probably one of the greatest gifts that I've walked away with is like, it's about three words. It's about process. It's either process related, relationship related, or they don't trust you. And he was a great mentor to me. And so the second part of your question was about leadership in general. What is my leadership style? It's going to be around process and relationship. Some will tell you, I had one of my employees says, David, you're kind of intimidating because I grew up working in wastewater. So I was working in the field and I learned almost every discipline you can learn. So what my stepdad had taught me was learn everything. I learned HR. I learned business law. I learned HR law. I learned finance. So when someone's talking to me, they're not going to get to just tell me, you're a manager, you don't understand these things. Like, understand, I do know those things. And so I'm a very diverse leader of what I know in my background because of what he told me to go do. Mm-hmm. And so it gives me tremendous insight and knowledge into a lot of different disciplines. But I like to believe that I'm a compassionate leader, but I have high expectations. I believe you need to have initiative. I believe that fear should not dictate your direction. If you're worried about keeping your job instead of you're doing your job, I don't have a lot of compassion for that. I understand we have to keep our jobs, right? Yeah. But if fear gets in the way and you're thinking, what if I lose it? There's other opportunities in this life. Don't live your life so much in fear. Mm-hmm. But I believe in looking at that person just like my step, I call him Johnny. I like to look at people and say, there's nothing you can't do. And I'm going to give you the chance to excel, but it's your chance to excel. No excuses. Mm-hmm. I expect you to be decisive. Yeah. And not let fear dictate your direction. But I like to believe that I'm an empowering leader with high expectations, but I have high expectations for myself. But I'm also a leader that believes in grace. So I like to coach people, not criticize people. And then someone will say, well, I've been criticized plenty. I just call it good coaching. But I have been times, you know, where I've been more on the process side. It's just all bottom line. But my leadership style is really about taking leadership of it and say, that's the way we've always done it. Break it. Disrupt it. It can be done different. I know it can be done different, but that's the way we've always done it as a mindset, especially in government. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what each city does. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be known for any other city than I want it to be the leadership style that I represent, which is I'm not really interested in what Kansas City, St. Louis, or any other city are doing. I'm worried about how Springfield's going to do it, and I want them to model us when it's all done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good.
Love that. Yeah. That was a great answer.
Great answer. All right. Get out your crystal ball.
Okay.
We know you got one. 2026, what does it look like for Springfield?
What it looks like is progress. It's going to be momentum. It's going to be really information. I mean, there's all government. Let's put it this way. There's always going to be disruption just because of the political nature and difficult mm-hmm. things.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But I think you're going to see taking on difficult tasks that have not been taken on. And so when I look at it, it's yes and. So we're talking about the Convention Event Center again. We need to talk about it again. Mm-hmm. But yes, and we need to talk about the things that have been held back, homelessness, crime, things that are just that have been at the forefront, even on the economic development front, when I'm hearing stormwater, just little projects, neighborhoods, parks. Our park systems need help. And so you can't just be one-dimensional. But what I'm really excited about is the five priorities the council has established about economic vitality, housing, and then also our permitting processes. I use the word operational excellence, which I asked for only one priority to be added. Council had four. I got to add one. And that's all about just operating at the speed of business. And that's like, I want us to be customer service oriented. I want us to be the Chick-fil-A of government that says, yes, you get the same consistent message. That's hard. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited about what the communities, I believe they're starting to see it now, even in the business world, that it's getting a little bit, because they're empowered. It's not because they were trying to be difficult. It's just mm-hmm. like, hey, it's okay to do these things. So I see progress. Obviously, we got, you know, April is a big month with potential ballot, but also, you know, the Route 66 festival.
Mm-hmm.
But just what I see happening in and around Jordan Valley, the daylighting and just the projects that we have. And there's just such a think tank of folks that are working nonstop for how to improve this community and advance our community. And I'll tell you another thing about it is I look forward in 2026 to quit talking so negatively about what's going on and talk more what is really going right. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we celebrate what we're actually getting there done. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I'm in these meetings where I told somebody the first 90 days, I felt more like a trash can. And I was just collecting all these comments. But I'm like, is there anything about your city that you love?
Can we have a positive comment,
please? Yeah. And so, but there is so much about this community that I'm excited for. I'm excited about leadership. I'm excited about what leadership can do when you empower people. When I look at the 2,200 employees that we have, I was one of those. I can't wait to watch what they're going to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When they're given the chance, like I'm given the chance to actually have an opinion, and I'm not going to ask, you're required.
Yeah.
This is part of your performance review now. It's like, hey, you cannot just sit back and say, that's above my pay grade. When you let people use their creative side, mm-hmm. and just like it was for me, mm-hmm. I went from a wastewater plant to City Hall to the third largest city because one little guy said, don't get beat over a piece of paper. There's nothing you can't do. Speak life to people, not death. And when you do that, I look forward to doing that inside the organization, inside this community. I'm going to speak life, not death. We're going to move forward, and I'm looking forward to what 2026. I'm looking forward for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years. I'm looking forward to what my granddaughters are going to get to have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's awesome. And I think we all feel that positive sort of energy now in Springfield. And I do want to point out that there are projects going on. And sometimes those projects, you have this big announcement, and I'm going to use Grant Avenue Parkway as an example. So you have this big example or this big announcement. We're going to revitalize Grant Avenue. Mm-hmm. And then people see little pieces of it come together, but things just take time. It's like anything in your life. No matter what you're trying to accomplish, it's a journey, right? It doesn't happen overnight. And so that project is now wrapped up.
Absolutely. Progress is a process.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't like those processes, you know, what you got to go through. I-44 will be the same way. It's going to be a pain. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But when it's all done and we're all going through 44 and 13, we're all going to say, wow, this was great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It took a long time to get there. But we got there, and that's that's the objective. So, yeah, progress is a process, and it's going to be tough.
Yeah.
Be patient.
Be patient. It's coming. Just like the other one that you mentioned, Jordan Valley.
Yes.
You know, it's in progress.
I'm looking forward to that.
All right. Well,
I have one more question.
Okay.
And this wasn't even on your list.
Okay, that's fine. I like that one.
Okay. She's going to fire away.
How does the city manager use AI in his job?
ChatGPT is like unbelievably. I mean, I know I would use it there. I would use it in data analytics. But one thing about it is Tom Douglas with JMark. I'm sure you both know him.
Mm-hmm.
Tom scared the living daylights out of me about 3 years ago when I was in a meeting. Maybe it's 2 years ago. We were sitting there and we were having a roundtable discussion, kind of leaders in the area about stuff. And my topic to cover was leadership. So I'm like, okay, and I'm kind of sweating because there's some pretty big name leaders what I'm kind of doing this with.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get to this thing about AI, and I said, Tom, that's your area. And if you know Tom at all, he's like, BS, you better figure it out or it's going to run you over like a train. And so what I started realizing is there are ways that you can analyze and evaluate, and I look at it as a time management tool. If you can respond, like, what is this about? What's the history of this about? Like, you know, even if you look at like Ford SGF, like if you're new coming into a community, you don't even know summarize Ford SGF for me.
True. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What are the top three
good
things?
Example.
But reading, having the time to stop and read all 85 pages of something in certain times. So I think I don't utilize it to Tom taught me, and I love this, that 70% is AI, 30% is still human. So, I like to still say there's a state of the human element. Don't just put everything in there. You can tell when someone's writing you something that's just been cut and paste off chat.
Yes.
Noise me to death. Like I can tell the markings. But I also don't fault someone for doing it, because here's why AI is so important, is because we have a diminishing workforce. And if we don't figure out how to utilize AI to make up for it, because here's what they're asking for us in our age and stage of life where we're at. Do more. Because we have no gap to take it. And for those of us that grew up in the baby boomers or way around them, what they're saying is we're going to work longer because we can't let the work we've gone fall to the wayside.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So we have got to find ways to embrace AI the best we can,
mm-hmm.
And make us more efficient in doing our work to do that. the fear is people are like, oh, you're trying to replace my job. I'm just trying to fill the job you've been asking to be filled for the last 6 months.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We have workforce shortage. Like, we need to fill that position. Why not let that process change help us do it? So I use it quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Love that answer.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I want to point out a couple of things. First of all, thank you, David, for being here. Great information. And we could probably talk all day because we didn't even really get into workforce or economic development. I mean, there's so many things.
Disruptive leadership is the one I wanted to get to.
Oh, did we not cover it?
No.
Okay.
That's okay. But no. We can do that next time.
No.
We want to do it now.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to take 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You asked me about it.
We asked you about leadership, and then we kind of got sidetracked a little bit. But
well, I think the word disruptive leadership, like I like to say, is I blame Logan and Gary for this because it really started when I was going to talk about the 5 laws of disruptive leadership at Biz 417 mm-hmm. Think Summit.
Mm-hmm.
But then it got kind of weaponized against me in the onboarding process. Like he's going to disrupt and change mm-hmm. and hatchet and
mm-hmm.
cut.
Mm-hmm.
Disruptive leadership is not about being disrespectful or it's about disrupting old norms. That's the way we've always done it. And changing from example to AI, if you're not evolving, it's going to run you over. Mm-hmm. That's a disruption. COVID was a disruption. Mm-hmm. You know what COVID brought us in that disruption? We had to use Zoom. We learned how to work remotely. We figured out and adapted. Right. Had that not happened, you would have not near the different things. It was a horrible situation, but look at what it caused us to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I look at disruptive leadership as an intentional way of going into places. And so I focus it around 5 points. About setting expectations, building your team around those expectations. So unless you have expectations of what you want to do, no one knows what the outcome is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to build your team to say, are you on board with these expectations? Because it was like, I'm not interested in that. And the third point I talk about is alignment. And the fourth one is you got to challenge status quo. And the fifth one is don't let fear dictate your direction, courage. If you want to disrupt something, even in your own personal life, set expectations for yourself. Build a team of a support around you. You know, have alignment where faith, hope. I mean, where you go to find your source of strength.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Challenge the status quo in your own life. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
And then don't let fear get in the way. Like, but what if I fail? What if you do?
Right.
So, I look at that from organizationally. I look at that personally. But I love disruptive leadership because I believe it can change people's lives. I think it can change organizations and cultures. I don't believe it. I know it. I've seen it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm not selling a product that I've not seen work exponentially on steroids, but you're giving someone their life and their identity back when you speak life to them. And sometimes you just got to do that with clarity and be honest.
Yeah.
Sometimes honesty is still kindness, but it may hurt.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm glad we got to that.
Is there anything else you want to talk about that we didn't ask about?
Don't put me on a microphone and start talking because I am a leadership. I enjoy these. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
I was like, so yes, when you ask, I'm like, absolutely, I'll do it. I've mm-hmm. tried to make myself available for the ones that I'm like, okay, I can really do this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, thank you for giving me 6 months because I'm not sure after 90 days I'd be like going, I don't know what I got myself into.
Well, and you had more to talk about.
Yeah.
I got a lot more in my quiver of what I know I can do and say now than I had before.
Thanks, David. We appreciate you being with us.
Yeah, we really do. And for our listeners out there, you know, be engaged and be involved. I know that you guys have been doing these community visits, but they're done now, but it may be an ongoing thing.
Yes, I believe it's necessary to engage more with the community on other topics. Yes, and. So the other projects that matter to the community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you can always watch, again, they're now on Mondays, though, right? The luncheons are now on Mondays versus Tuesday?
Yeah, we moved those to Mondays and televised them.
Okay. And Monday night city council meeting. So you can watch them at your leisure, and it's great to have that information. So just want to point that out.
We want to thank our sponsors and thank Gershman Mortgage for recording with us. Thanks again, David Cameron.
Mm-hmm.
We appreciate you.
Yes, thank you.
And we'll be watching.
Yes, we will. And please share this episode with anyone who might need to know more about what's going on in their city.
We'll catch you guys on the next episode.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to the Simply Authentic podcast. Be sure to hit follow so that you can see each episode as it pops up weekly.